From Italy to the Canadian Rockies and beyond, Gazette Travel makes exploring the world easy and stress-free. See our full lineup of tours at thegazette.com/travel.
Welcome to the Pinning Combination Podcast. I'm KJ Pilcher of the Gazette alongside Hall of Famer Dick Briggs. In our final pinning combination of the 2025-2026 season, it's all said and done. We put a bow on the college season on Saturday. Of course, there's still international stuff going on, freestyle, world team trials, Pan Am games in Coralville, all that good stuff later. But as far as high school and college action has finished up. On Saturday, themes seems like it flew by.
Yeah, it does. I mean, the college season is such a long season, and to the athletes and coaches, you know, it can be a grind for sure. But for you and me, that just deal with it, you know, on a once a week basis, you know, it flies by for us.
Yeah. Right. True. True. I don't. What was your feeling like? Whether it's as a coach, as a competitor, when you got to this point of the year, speaking from my one, it was always a sense of kind of like a reset button almost that you got to this point, take maybe a week or two to kind of get this behind you. Obviously in high school, it was moving on to the next sport. For me, which was track or baseball. In college, it was waiting a couple weeks before kind of, you know, working out with teammates and stuff like that again. But for you, what was this time of year always like with the season concluding and kind of spring starting, something to, you know, kind of turning the page a little bit?
Right. So as a coach, in high school, when the season was over, the high school and college season, it was like I would open the Gazette and go, there's nothing in here for me. There was, but it was like, there's no rustling in the fine print. I would scour that fine print, you know, just it's just what you do. I mean, that we didn't have social media. We didn't have any other way. That was how we got our information. And it was fun.
Yep.
And so I really missed that. It was like an emptiness. I don't mean to just blow wind up your skirt there, KJ, as a sports writer, but that was the truth. So now, as a competitor in college, when the season was over, it was always a disappointment because I was never on the top, right? So, but you know, I had a fair you know, couple of years there, and actually we got to compete in four different national tournaments. But when those were over, then I got to be a college student, because up until then I was like a wrestler and I was so focused and I couldn't do anything socially. So then, you know, when it was over, then you could go down at UNI to the hill and, you know, be a college student and have fun down there. And so so any UNI folks or anyone that visited UNI, they should know what the hill is.
Right.
I don't know if it's still a thing or not. But so that's kind of different perspective there as a coach and as a competitor.
Yeah, you know, for me, I shouldn't be saying this, but, you know, in college, you bring up the social aspect. You know, we took certain things seriously. So when mid-October hit, it was dry. Mm-hmm. But after March rolled around, that's when you – let's just say
work hard, play hard.
Yes, there you go. Perfect example. So, and that was, you know, that was part of it. You put in all that work from, you know, when we started preseason stuff, like official or unofficial preseason stuff in October. You know, obviously there was lifting and other stuff that we were doing before we actually got together for some conditioning practices and stuff like that. But from that point on, it was like, hey, we got a job to do. And I know it hasn't been there in recent years, but, you know, BV, I mean, we were fifth in the country, you know, 1 year, like right on the edge of the top 10 another year. You know, we were a pretty strong program then. And it was one of those things where, you know, the season, you, like you said, you worked your butt off. You're dedicated during that time at the D3 level when the season was over. You know, there was some windows there to be able to let loose a little bit after the season. That's probably where I would have been at this point right now. and I'm sure there are some other competitors and stuff relaxing and enjoying themselves at this time. But Cleveland, what a great tournament. I don't know what your thoughts were from the overall show in those 3 days, but man, it was one of the more entertaining nationals from Thursday morning to Saturday night that I can remember.
Right. And we always used to say the semifinals were the best round, and they probably still were, but the quarterfinals, holy cow, those were action packed full, and the finals. And the thing with the finals is you've pared it down to one mat. So so when the match is over, now you got all this downtime where you're giving out awards and you're interviewing the athlete and you're, you know, TV timeouts and that sort of thing. So that kind of plays into that finals, but the finals this year were so competitive. You know, other than maybe I wasn't too keen on 125. We'll talk about those a little bit later. And heavyweight wasn't, you know, it was kind of a ride out thing after the takedown, you know. So, and then there was one in the middle, I think, that didn't tickle me too much. But man, overall, there's some great finals. So, anyway,
We'll talk a little bit about Iowa, Iowa State, you and I, some overall impressions and takeaways from the tournament. I know you've got a little bit of some subjects that you want to touch on, kind of a potpourri of topics in your teeing off. And then I also want to bring up a few things just to kind of piggyback your items. Some things in the finals or after the finals even, that occurred that makes me think maybe the awards or post stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe things should be changed a little bit there. We'll see. But first off, let's talk a little bit about Iowa. You know, this is, I think a lot of people will agree this was a down year for the Hawkeyes. Through the Big Ten tournament, really. It was not even Tom Brands admitted this is one of his worst seasons, and rightfully so. You know, the most dual losses in school history, fourth place finish at the Big Tens. But we talked about it last week that with their seeds, they had an opportunity to – earn as many as 7 All-American honors, and that's where they end up finishing. 7 All-Americans. The other two were a win away from reaching the podium. I mean, there has to be a positive with the way the season ended for them, don't you think?
Right. Well, I mean, they were the number one team in terms of wrestling above their seeds. They were plus 36. Now, most of that is attributed to two wrestlers. Well, to two wrestlers, in particular Gabe Arnold, who's seeded 27th and finishes 7th. So that's 20 jumps right there. But, you know, so, yeah, I mean, there's really one wrestler that wrestled below his seed, and that was maybe a two, I guess, below. But Bailey, who was seeded 7th and didn't place, you know, that was probably a disappointment there for him. I think there are some other disappointments along the way, but they're still ended up on the positive side. You know, like Ferrari, you know, was seeded 7th and finishes 6th, and that's a medical forfeit to 6th after he lost in the semis. So, yeah, a lot to be happy for, but There's some guys that are leaving this team that have left their mark on it for sure. And Kennedy, Caliendo, and Ayala.
And that's one of the things too. Caliendo making the finals again, boy. You talk about some wrestlers in Iowa history that never won a title. And as far as, the ability that they had, the first one you obviously think of is Chad Zapadol, right? He was kind of thwarted by a Penn State guy, Jim Martin, is who it was back then. If it's another weight class, you almost have to think that Caliendo probably gets one of these last 2 years. But going against Mitchell Messenbrink, one of the best pound for pound wrestlers in the country, that's a tough one.
Yeah. Oh, without question. And I'll go one step beyond. He's not one of. If there was ever a hands-down lock for the Hodge Award, to me, it's him. He's just been phenomenal all year long. So I would agree with you that Caliendo would have had a better shake had he not been in his way.
Yeah. And you bring up something, too. I know there's a lot of talk. I know Josh Barr had a dominant year, but 197 wasn't anywhere close to being a weight class like 165, you've got to take that in consideration. I know a lot of people were saying, well, it could be between him and Barr. And, I don't know why there's a debate. It's got to be Messenbrink. I think it's a clear cut Hodge Trophy winner there.
Oh yeah, hands down. And again, nothing taking anything from Barr, and you nailed it. 97. No, we've been saying it all along. It's probably I don't want to say the weakest, but the depth wise, it was not there like the other nine weights, basically.
Right. Right. And I think 197 and 149, we talked about how those were kind of wide open weight classes, right? There wasn't that strong elite level of guy, like you have a four, like 133, where you had six or seven guys that were capable of winning it. And that's where you saw a number 27 get on the award stand, right? Not taking anything away from Gabe Arnold. It was awesome. Feel good story. He did a great job, especially wrestling through the backside. But another weight class, you're not seeing another number 27 guy probably getting through. Same thing with 49, where you had Shane Van Ness, who was the number one seed, and then you had, a slew of guys that were double-digit seeds getting through. And I think that just says a little bit about that. You bring up Ayala and Kennedy. Obviously, their contributions – through the year, they're going to leave some huge ASICs to fill in the future. Ayala coming away with a fifth place finish. How big is it for guys like Ayala and Kennedy leaving the program eligibility wise? I'm sure they might still be around with the Hawkeye Wrestling Club, but you know what I mean with that. But to end on a win, as somebody that's coached wrestlers and been kind of in that situation yourself, how big of a deal is it to win that last match?
Well, you hear the commentators or whoever the coaches talk about when a wrestler gets on that backside, you want to end on the odds. And that was definitely what you want to do. My junior year, I did not. I ended up fourth, and I lost to the kid that I majored in the second round earlier in the tournament. It was all this, and I was so disappointed I didn't win it. I just wasn't there and ready to do what I did. And I had to live with that for an entire year, until I got back to that national tournament and rectified it. So in my mind, it's huge. You want to try and go out at least with the win, getting that arm raised that last time.
And what did you think about those guys? You know, between those three seniors, you had a second, a third with Kennedy, and a fifth with Ayala. Given their whole body of work, what is your big takeaway from those three guys?
Man, I'm impressed with Caliendo. After he transferred, I didn't know much about him till, you know, when he was up at North Dakota State. So, right. And then here he is, you know, we just pretty much talked about him, kept the string going. What are you at 36 years now? So that's yep. something, and that's something he can wear proudly. You know, that's something to, you don't want it to end on you. And, not that it would be just him, but the this year's team, the 10 competitors. Mm-hmm. Then as far as Ayala is concerned, man, there's a guy that's been a competitor, and you know, I've watched him at Fort Dodge. He'd come over to the Jefferson Invitational and compete there, and just a competitor. And I really appreciate the battle he had this year. You know, he had some tough matches throughout the entire season, it seemed like. He's always wrestling a ranked guy. And then to place fifth, good for him. That's it. That's a good, you know, four, is he a four-timer now, I believe? I forget what it was. Three-timer.
Missed out his freshman year as a true freshman. Okay. Filling in for Spencer Lee.
Right. Right. And then as far as Kennedy's concerned, you know, the story with him is this is a guy that could have walked away to another program or not, but he, you know, there's the stayed around, I guess all of them, but stayed around and has that blue collar workmanlike attitude, and you gotta love that. You know, as a fan of the sport and a fan of Iowa, there's a guy you wanna support for sure.
So. The one thing with Kennedy, and I posted this on social media. The one thing that caught my attention Saturday is, you know, sometimes I'll be honest, there are some people that skip Saturday morning session, fans, I mean, just because, you know, it's like, oh, who cares? You know, if you don't think those matches mean something, even though they're not wrestling for a title, go back and watch Patrick Kennedy's matches on Saturday morning, his consolation semis, and then that third place match with the Carson Karchla, which, how about that series? You know, best of seven over the last 2 years, the last two of them coming in the national tournament this year. I mean, both warriors reminded me a little bit of Mike Evans and Logan Storley, except with more offense, I think I said. But if you watch the effort, and shouldn't be surprised, you touched on it, you know, his workmanlike approach. He's a grinder, you know, but the effort that he had and the way he wrestled, it meant something. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the come back and get the next best thing was not just cliche for him. You could tell by the sense of urgency he had in those matches. That's what he was determined to get there. And those matches meant something to him. He wasn't just going through the motions and trying to finish things out. Right. And that's something I think is kind of the epitome of his career and his effort over 4 years.
And those guys that were wrestling on Saturday morning, they're looking up at the scoreboard, team scoreboard, and they're battling for fourth and fifth, really. And mm-hmm. fourth is a tournament, is a trophy that they take home. Fifth is not. And I think they had that in their minds, and they carried that out on the mat with them too. So that's nice when you're in that sort of situation. Maybe not for fourth. Maybe you're battling for, you know, between first and second, or, you know, the one that's higher. But I think that was definitely on their minds too. So that helped a bit.
Four Iowa high schoolers for the Hawkeyes earn All-American honors: Ayala, Ryder Block, Gabe Arnold, and Ben Keeter. Does that mean anything?
That's four pretty darn good wrestlers coming through high school. And I think we'll see more in the future. But, you know, we haven't spoken about Ryder Block. Wow, what a job he did. What was he, 15th seed, finishes sixth? You know, there's a guy that just this entire season seemed to improve and just, again, kept knocking it out. And, you know, he'd take a loss here or there and still come back and battle hard. And who did he wrestle for fifth? He wrestled one guy twice in the tournament, didn't he?
He wrestled the four seed from Virginia Tech, Colin Gage.
Gage, okay. Did he wrestle? Okay. Who did he wrestle prior to that?
Let me see. I'm
Hartzell, was it? Oh no, Swiderski, wasn't it?
He wrestled Swiderski.
Yes,
in the would have been like the consolation quarters.
Right. So Swiderski, who was also an All-American, right? But he beat him twice.
He finished top eight.
So that, you know, Locke had a nice season. I just wanted to give him kudos on that, man. It's fun watching him, I thought.
Yeah. His two losses on Saturday were to Lachlan McNeil of Michigan, which is that's a quality competitor there. And then Gage, who is the four seed from Virginia Tech. His first loss came to the second seed, Jackson Joy of Cornell. Real good tournament there for Ryder Block. Like you said, wrestling well above his seed. Kind of overshadowed by Gabe Arnold a little bit because of that. With what Gabe Arnold was able to do. What are your thoughts about that that accomplishment from Gabe Arnold and just what he's done over the course of the season here to really kind of show that team first attitude and move up and then be rewarded for his effort with the All-American honors.
Right. I think for Gabe bouncing up to 97, obviously he wrestled three different weights, 74, 84, 97. But primarily I think his body was kind of locked into the 84. He had to cut pretty good to get to 74. Not that he couldn't do that, but you know, he did that when Patrick was out of the lineup at a time or two, and then back up to 84 when Angelo was out of the lineup. We know that at the end of the season, and then finally bumps up to 97. I think he weighed 97 or in that vicinity. You know, when you're cutting a lot of weight, that's not unusual to maybe be able to put on 20 pounds, especially at the higher weights. But
especially with fluids.
Yeah, with fluids, right. And so then, but the thing is that his body size and his body type wasn't not necessarily a 97 pound body type, short and squatty, but he's so strong that he could, you know, he could get away with it. And his style of wrestling, real conservative, and get a takedown and then, you know, be able to defend it off and, you know, do such a good job there to be able to place. I'm impressed. That's not easy to do.
Keeter, two-time All-American. He seemed to have a really good tournament, to be honest. His loss to Bastida, 4-2, nothing to really hang your head about with that. Comes back and gets fifth. Closer with Gaudiale of Michigan in the Concy semis, but I thought Ben had a good tournament as well after, kind of like the team, kind of like Ayala, rough regular season, and he kind of puts it together there at the end for a good finish, I thought.
10th seed at the Big Tens, 8th seed at Nationals, and I believe that the champion, runner-up, third, and fourth are all seniors and are gone, which would make him potentially be number one next year. Yeah, if he, in fact, there's talk whether he's going to do football or whatever. I assume he's still going to do wrestling, even though he does football. So if he does that, hopefully he doesn't get hurt or anything. So he could be number one of the nation out of the get-go next year.
Could be. Speaking of next year, just really quickly, you know, you've got Bailey coming back. You've got Ryder Blott coming back. Ferrari, Arnold, Keter, Harvey Ludington, who is expected to be kind of the future at 197, is back in there. Gabe at more of a natural weight. Leo DeLuca at 125. They expect big things from him if he's healthy. You know, he was a freshman this year. You obviously have some holes in the middle weights. You've got Bailey coming back who, you know, who knows if he goes back down to 133 where he was an All-American for Little Rock or if he stays at 141. But what do you see as far as what Iowa has to work with going to next year?
I think they're going to probably be hitting they already are, whenever they were able to hit the when I say that, I say there's a window of communicating with people that are in the transfer portal, and I don't know when that opens and closes, but I'm guessing
April 1st and April 30th. So essentially the month of April is where they'll be working.
So I think we're going to find out in the next month. So, you know, what's going to happen. But I think you nailed it, those middle weights. And I think they're probably going to need to get some support at some of the other weights as well. The gaps being filled, upper middle to upper middle weights.
They'll definitely be active that way. You know, Tom Brandt's talked about how they'll evaluate not just the roster, but also personnel. You know, we've already seen some coaching changes already. Hidley from Stanford has gone back to North Carolina State, his alma mater. John Reeder has stepped down as an assistant to go into the private sector at Wisconsin. Think it's a safe bet you might see something occur in Iowa City as far as a shakeup of the staff, but we'll just have to see how that plays out. And I don't want to be the Debbie Downer to all this because it was a good finish. You know, they wrestled well above their seeds. 7 All-Americans is nothing to sneeze at. You know, 4 of them coming back. Another one who didn't All-American this year that is a former All-American, so that's 5. But they still were out of third place. They didn't really challenge for a top 3 spot.
Yeah, they were
And they had to fight like hell to finish 4th to get that last trophy. It was great, but in reality, it's still a distant 4th, really.
Not even close to first. No one was close to first. No. Not even close to second.
They were close to second.
Second, right. I think some of the fans are going to have to understand that right now, Iowa's not a top dog right now. I mean, they're obviously top 5, but they're not first or second right now. So that's why they're going to have to really hit the transfer portal hard. And I don't know if they're going to be able to do it or not. You know, so this year and last year, they kind of stubbed their toe a little bit on some of that. One of your transfer portal guys wasn't even in your lineup by a coach's decision at the Big Ten National Tournament. Will he be back? I don't know. You know, I'm speaking of Williams.
Right.
Will he put himself in there? I wouldn't be surprised if he did.
You know, and that's where, you know, it's going to take a cycle still. You know, you look at, we'll talk about this too, but Oklahoma State had 4 freshmen in the finals. 3 of them won. You know, you're going to need more than just, you know, plucking out a 5th place finisher from the portal to make grounds there. Same thing with Penn State. You know, you've got guys like Tyler Kasich that wasn't even in their lineup this year that can contend for a title to plug right back in there. So, yeah. You know, yeah.
So it's going to take a while.
to climb up.
And what you mean by that is that Penn State's only senior is Haynes, Levi Haynes. He's out. Insert who did you just mention?
Tyler Cassett.
Right in there. And then also you might see some maybe even some national champs that don't make the lineup because of some guys that are in their room right now.
Right.
So and if that's the case, maybe they should be in the transfer portal, and there you go, Iowa.
It'll be interesting to see how things go. Let's talk about Iowa State now. They had 10 qualifiers, first time since 2010. They only finished with 3 All-Americans, Younger Bastida making the finals for the first time in his career, becoming a 2-time All-American. Anthony Etchemendia, 141, placing 6th. And then MJ Gaitan finishing 8th at 174. Gaitan, obviously, the real bright spot for him, making the podium. Bastida, up until the finals, was fantastic. Just kind of ran into, really good, maybe an under-the-radar kind of guy in Isaac Trumbull, if you could say that about a guy that's undefeated.
And seeded second.
But, one little scramble there in the second period was the difference. Trumbull came out on top there. Not sure I agree on the call, the review. Thought Bastida might have had a takedown there before Trumbull was able to come around behind to get his takedown. But, I'm probably not a great judge when it comes to that. But hell of a year for Bastida to finish things off.
And you'd like to think you reward the aggressive guy rather than the guy that didn't shoot at all. So basically, Bastida makes a deep shot, but he's undersized to Trumbull and Trumbull's powerful hips. And ended up not being able to finish the takedown. It ended up in a double leg position and wasn't able to finish it, and gave up the takedown. I don't disagree with you either. It was one of those real close ones. And I don't know that in high school, I don't think it would have been a takedown. But in college, everything's a little bit quicker. So, I don't disagree with you on that. That could have went that Younger's way.
We knew just by their seeds, it was going to be kind of a tough road to hoe for Iowa State that, they were qualifying all 10, but it was going to be, kind of a tough draw for them given their seeds, and it turned out to kind of be that way. But what was your impression of how things went for Iowa State? Kind of a bummer? Status quo?
If I was Iowa State, if I could do an impression of Iowa State, I'd wrap my head, put my arm in a sling, put a brace on my knee. I mean, they were so injured. I mean, here's the injury list that off the top of my head. Evan Frost gets injured before Big 12s, can't compete. What was he, ranked 3rd or 4th maybe at the time?
Definitely top 6.
Top 6 for sure. I think it was 4th. But anyway, Zerbin gets hurt and wasn't wrestling 100%. Dean's hurt, not wrestling 100%. Elam's hurt. I mean, there's a number 2 seed that can't even walk. He's hurt. Evidently got hurt in the last 30 seconds of the finals at Big 12s. And Zerbin didn't even work out until the Nationals. So it couldn't go hard. And then don't forget Panera Johnson also out. There's 5 studs right there that are out of that lineup. And so, I mean, that's the story.
Yeah, 4 of them are All-Americans.
Yeah. And it's like, I felt bad for him. And then they could have went home with a good feeling if Younger would have gotten the takedown and wanted it heavyweight, but he didn't do that. So it's a kind of a rotten feeling for Iowa State, going home and sitting on that. Yeah.
Yeah. But if you look at what they have, you've got a good nucleus of wrestlers coming back. As well, you know, you mentioned Evan Frost, Jacob Frost, who didn't make the stand this year, but did a year ago. They're both All-Americans. You've got Etchemendia there at 41, kind of in between the two brothers. You know, you've got Pinero Johnson, who I think really could fit anywhere between 149 and 165 if needed. He's wrestled those weights at one time in the past. You know, you expect him to come back from injury after last season. Connor Uten actually had some nice wins at the NCAA tournament. Didn't make the stand, but had a decent showing. You've got Gaetan, who's now a returning All-American and is funky and, you know, can catch just about anybody. And the one thing, too, with heavyweight, remember, Daniel Herrera did not have a bad year last year as a true freshman filling in for Yonger Bastida. He, you know, he was a national qualifier as a true freshman. You give him another year to grow up. I'm assuming that's what he's, you know, doing right now, being able to work out with Bastida. I think Iowa State's going to I think he's going to be big for Iowa State next year. And you got Kobe Merrill, highly touted recruit at heavyweight, coming in as well. So, boy, between 133 and 157, they're going to have a really strong nucleus back. You've got some upper weights, middle to upper weights with Uten and Gaetan, who are pretty experienced. I think you're going to be you're going to have a really good option at heavyweight. And then Christian Castillo, who was a freshman. Remember, he transferred from California to Ames, won a state title at Ames his senior year, was a highly touted recruit. You know, I know it wasn't the finish that Iowa State and their fans hoped for, but it was a good year overall, and I think they have the makings for a similar year, maybe with a better finish in 2027.
Right. Crazy? You didn't mention, I don't think you did. Poulin's a senior, isn't he?
Yes.
25. Yeah. So Grice, who went 2-2 in the tournament, had a nice tournament for, you know, getting late notice, you know, right before.
Big yeah, college. Right.
And so I don't know if he can make 25 or not. So, but Grice did a good job. He's very close to being an All-American. And Jacob Frost, you mentioned, I think went 3-2. So he was, I'm not sure if he lost in the blood round. I like to call it the All-American round.
And, sure. It's more stunning.
Yeah, I like that a little bit better than the blood one. So, but anyway, so yeah, I agree with you. They're going to be solid.
Yeah. Frost went 3-2. His losses were to Shane Van Ness, which, you know, I mean, that's something that happens to a lot of people. And, across to Wasilewski from Penn in the All-American round.
Thank you.
There. So, you know, you and I, they had five qualifiers, had a pretty good start, but then didn't get anybody on the award stand. First time, I think since 2015 that you and I hasn't had an All-American. It was just a tough year all around. You know, I know Doug Schwab said, you know, I think there's kind of a duality in the way he kind of feels about it, where he's proud of the effort that the guys had, but still disappointed in the final outcome. Not disappointed in the guys, just disappointed in the fact that they weren't able to achieve their goals, and they don't have an All-American to come back.
Right. So I like to say you're disappointed for them, not in them, but for them.
Perfect.
You know, there's those guys that you get to know intimately. You know, your blood, sweat, and tears that you go through as a coach and an athlete, and then you want the best for those kids, and then when they don't achieve it, there's times I've sat down and shed some tears with them. And you've seen that, you know. I down at Des Moines, I could have been celebrating my son being a state medalist, and instead I'm back consoling one of my other athletes that, you know, it was hard.
That didn't make it. Yep.
So,
seen that.
Anyway, so with you and I don't know what to say. I mean, of course they had injuries, but they also had opportunities and they just didn't get it done. And that's going to be one of my bullet points here. So I don't want to say too much.
Okay. What I'll say about you and I is, they had all kinds of troubles throughout the year. They had some positives. Julian Farber, the last 2 years had lost to Jacob Van Dee of Nebraska at the national tournament. 1 year it was even an elimination match. Farber opens with a win against Van Dee, so heck of a start. I think they went 5-0 maybe in that first session. He came back. That was a big win for him. Rachi had a couple good wins. I'll say this, and I really don't like begging on officials. I think that's kind of just an easy way to make excuses for things. I thought Rachi, for lack of a better term, got hosed in his second round match. With the way the stalling rules are right now, I don't know how you don't call that. I understand officials don't want to be the deciding factor, but when it's apparent, it's apparent. Call it. Wisielewski from Penn hops out of bounds. Hops out of bounds. Not trying to fight off a single. Rachi's got his leg up, elevated. He hops backwards out of bounds. No stall call. That would have been the difference maker. Now, as Doug Schwab points out, bad call, but did he have an opportunity? Of course he did. He could have still come back and won and got the takedown or scored, however. Gave up a takedown instead and lost. I thought that was that was a rough one. But, he had a couple nice wins. Downey had a come-from-behind win in his first match. That was big as well. I'm trying to think. Nick Fox had a win over Isaac Dean in the consolations, which I think reversed a regular season match. So I think there's some positives there. Obviously still the thing that stands out is no All-Americans and finishing tied for 31st. When it's all said and done, that's what it boils down to. I think they have a lot coming back. The key is going to be getting people healthy and keeping them healthy next year, especially Wyatt Volker at heavyweight. I think some big things are ahead for him. You got Corey Land trying to keep him healthy again. You bring back Nick Fox, Ryder Downey, try to plug in some other guys. I know they've got some good talent coming in and maybe get a transfer or two like they have, like they did with Rachi, Real Buto a couple years ago. So I guess that's my take on you and I.
Right. And I don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but I think it was the Farber call that I'm going, oh, no, why do we have it? And I couldn't help but think that the official might have been overcompensating because he lives in Gilbertville, Iowa.
Yeah. I think that might have something to do with it, too.
Yeah. And I'm like, wow, just the way the rotation drew, I guess. But
yeah,
I was with you on that. I thought that one should have been. It should have went Farber's way. I'm pretty sure it's a Farber match, right?
Yes.
And Farber for me to do that.
Rachi.
Rachi. Yep. Sorry. But far be it for me to throw an official in because that's a tough job, especially.
I always say stuff like that by prefacing, I got booed off a softball diamond by my own daughter, so I'm a terrible official and umpire. I know it. I couldn't do what I couldn't remotely do what the most basic junior high umpire could do. Nevertheless, an official on the biggest stage of wrestling.
Oh yeah.
So put it that way. Put it that way.
It's scrutinized now. Of course, it's got the video review and the we had a few of those in the finals, we're doing video reviews. I was watching a basketball game, the Iowa women's basketball game, giving the other team all that about 2 5-minute rest when they didn't really that could have aided Iowa by not having to go to the review or whatever. So anyway, my point is that can change an entire match or whatever. And so, it sounds like they need to define some definitive takedowns. And we heard Kale Sanderson say that at the tournament. And I know others and the announcers were saying that as well. So I think that'll get reviewed or reviewed or whatever at the rules meeting this summer.
I agree. Before we get into your why don't we do your teeing it up before I ask you about your favorite finals or the actual championship matches that stood out.
So this is gonna be kind of back and forth this year. So first of all, I did want to mention this. When we did our top five picks, we did pretty well. At least I don't recall yours, but I think you did pretty well with that. But one team that kind of slipped was Ohio State. I don't know if you noticed that. They had Bazakis, who was third seed, did not place. Feldman, who was the fifth seed, did not place. Stiles, who was the seventh seed, did not place. Ouch, that hurts. And then, of course, Devino and Mendez don't win it in the finals. Brandon Cannon, who I said, watch this guy, he's pretty good, right? He had two losses in the tournament. Both of them were to PJ Duke. So he ended up fourth, did a good job. He was the eighth seed. But anyway, so Ohio State, what did you think of their performance?
Of Ohio State, I thought it was pretty lackluster.
Yeah.
It surprised me because, I think they faded a little bit here this season.
Yeah, for sure. I had them at third. And they ended up fifth or sixth or whatever.
I had them either second or third, depending on how things. I did not expect the freshman. Expected Forrest to do well. I did not expect the other Oklahoma State freshmen to ascend the way they did. Yep. So I kind of had Ohio State in that second or third spot.
Then on the other side, with Nebraska, who I don't mean to knock on Nebraska, but throughout last year and prior to last year, they kind of seemed to fade in the Big Tens and in the national championships. Boy, this last 2 years, they've really had good tournaments, I think, for the most part. Last year, way better, but this year, pretty good still. Anyway.
Right.
Okay. On to the next one. Here we go. The handshake, the no handshake. What's your take on that? With Caliendo and Messenbrink shaking hands.
Okay. I'll preface this by saying I've covered Michael Caliendo for 3 years. Okay. I know what kind of person he is. Some of that time there have just been casual conversations. So I know the kind of person that he is. Here's the first thing. So I know he's not a jerk. Okay. One, I know Tom Brands talked about in his post tournament interview before Caliendo came down to the thing. He mentioned that Caliendo was hurting. Okay. He was in a bad spot, he dashed, right? So I don't think it was great just from that standpoint. Second, and if I catch a lot of flack for this, I don't give a dang. Either. I think what Mitchell Messenbrink did was disingenuous. I think what he was doing was posturing. That wasn't sportsmanship. That wasn't happy-go-lucky, wishing everybody well. He was being a jackwagon. He knew what he was doing. He was pulling on the dog's tail trying to bite, whether it was Caliendo or somebody else on that award stand. He was posturing, and he did it at, just as a display. He was trying to think of the right words. I don't think he was just up there trying to congratulate everybody and telling everybody, you did a great job. Way to go. And just being happy and grateful or whatever. That's my take. You know, I think Christian Piles was the one that said he shook his hand before and after the match. What else do you want? Kind of agree with that too. Had it been me, I'd like to think I probably would have shook his hand begrudgingly anyway, but I don't blame him for not shaking his hand at that point, at that moment, because I think he probably understood what was going on. But that's me probably being biased on one side over the other.
All right, so here's my quick take on it. One, in high school, you know how in youth, when you're coming through with youth tournaments, you typically have the coach or the parent has them go over and shake the other parent's hand. And in high school, you can't do that. You can't, if you go over, if you offer to shake the hand of the opposing coach, that's an unsportsmanlike conduct and one team point deduction. So, you know, like we say, we shake hands before the match, we shake hands after the match. And I don't know that anyone else went over and shook everyone's hand when they're on the award stand. I think I'd like to think he was just over excited and happy that he won it and it's done. And as far as Caliendo's feeling, you know, here's a guy that not only lost his national title, he got beat 7 times straight or whatever it was. And then not only that, it was embarrassing. I mean, if I'm sitting in the stands and I just got technical fouled in the national tournament, I'm a little bit mad and I'm a little bit embarrassed. And now this guy's coming around here that made me feel this way. I'm probably going to do that. I don't know that I'd do the same thing, but I certainly understand why he didn't offer.
And here's the difference too. It's not like he went to shake his hand and Caliendo slapped it away.
Yeah.
Or went to shake his hand and Caliendo said, F you. Or went to shake his hand and he gave him the finger. Yeah. He just stood there stone-faced and ignored it, which I got no problem with. If he would have done something else, then I would have been, you don't do that. Don't slap his hand away. Just stand there.
Yeah.
I think he handled it okay. And here's another thing. Amir, our producer Amir, and I were talking in our staff meeting, and one thing that just kind of come to mind then was, remember at the end of last season, so he's 0-9 against Messenbrink. At the end of last season, Caliendo had kind of closed the gap a little bit. Remember, he wrestled him pretty close in the Big Tens. I think it was fairly decent of a showing in the finals last year. This year, Messenbrink blew the doors off it. He widened the gap this year. That has to add to the frustration, knowing that you had gotten closer, and then this year, Messenbrink just pulled away. You know, yeah. That's got to add a little salt to the wound, knowing that not only did he beat you again, but boy, this year you weren't really competitive with him.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned that as a coach, wrestlers would come over before that rule was instituted, that they would come over and shake hands, and some of them would say really rotten stuff. Not very many, but, you know, or they had just acted like jack wagon? Jack wagon out on the mat, you know, and poor sportsmanship, and then they come over and offer to shake hands. Like, are you kidding me? After what you just did, you're going to try and show, you know, some sort of sportsmanship? Right. That just seems silly. So, I mean, yeah. Anyway, all right.
So I want to bring this up. Before you go on, I want to bring this up to you. This is one of the things I thought about. So Shane Van Ness of Penn State did not make the award stand, or was at least late for the award stand at 149. And it was no fault of his, which some people wanted to make it out to be like sour grapes. But what happened was he got caught up in the NCAA drug testing protocol and wasn't able to get back in time. You know, he just got upset by Aiden Valencia of Stanford, which is a great story also. But he just got caught up in protocol. He wasn't upset or didn't want to come back or anything like that. But it, you know, people want to jump to conclusions, right? That wasn't the case with Shane Van Ness. It was out of his control. Here's my question. Do we have to give those awards out between weight classes? Especially now when we have TV, when there's already this long break in between finals. Can we just move the awards to the very end of the finals after all the matches and championship matches are concluded, have all of the awards presented then, and that gives people time to get through NCAA protocol and all the stuff that they have to do. We've seen people get caught up in interviews before. I think D3s that happened to one of the finalists, or maybe the women's tournament down in Coralville. Because there's interviews, there's drug protocol, you know, drug testing. It also gives you more time to cool down or, you know, let the excitement drop. Is that something that needs to be considered? Just move the awards to the end of the night. Don't do it in between and maybe avoiding some issues.
Well, I mean, I can only answer this with what I think might some of those questions you just posed. Like, for instance, can they do that? Well, if you're ESPN, it kind of works out all right because now you're occupying the crowd while they're doing their commercials and paying for the bills. Maybe that's an issue. I will say this. I don't know how he was held up. I know that I can speak for my son, Kyle, who after his national tournament, in Cedar Rapids here, he had to, and it was randomly drawn. I think the champions and then the others were randomly drawn or whatever. So he has to hang around for an hour trying to go to the bathroom. You know, so, I mean, because that's what a drug test is. You know, you give a urine sample and he can't do it because he's, you know, he's waiting around. The arena's empty and he's standing there trying to go to the bathroom, you know. Anyway, so, you know, maybe that was the issue too. So, again, that's not on Van Ness, I don't think. So,
No, not at all.
Jeez. Anyway, so, all right.
All right, go ahead.
Kind of way different, but another one that I noticed. Did you notice that when Gabe Arnold won his match and it was right in the corner of the coaches there, he was all excited, he was just off the mat even, he stood up, walked back to the middle, and one of the brands, I think it was Tom, catches up to him on his way to shake hands and hands him his headgear that he just left there. He didn't throw it, he didn't drop it, when he was down there, took it off, set it down, and set it back so that they didn't get a team point deduction. It looks silly. I mean, come on. They were doing a lot of that, I think, this year. I think that was a point of emphasis, and it was unnecessary, if you ask me. Okay, here, a couple of highlights. I thought, man, I was so impressed with Stanford. That's a program that was dropped 3 years ago, was it?
Yeah, right.
Maybe four. And now they're sixth in the nation. They had a great showing, and they're sixth. They're two spots out of a trophy. And then I'm going to also throw into that, and this is a school that I always watch every year. 30 some years that I went to the national tournament, I always look because they're Columbia Blue, but Columbia. Sure. I like to look at their singlets and also North Carolina, their singlets, you know. So anyway, but Columbia had a great showing, so good that, and this is kind of neat. They finished 17th, which is impressive for an Ivy League school. But guess who was 18th and 19th and 20th? So Columbia was 17th, Cornell was 18th, Penn was 19th, and Princeton was 20th. So they beat all those Ivy League schools. You know those other three schools are a little ticked at Columbia right now.
Yeah.
And Coach of the Year, Donnie Fritzloff from Columbia. So very nice thing for Columbia. Yeah.
No, Caesar Alvin, he was one of the highlights there. I think he was like a fifth seed that wrestled for third. I can't remember what weight class it was, maybe 157 or something
in the middle
like that.
Somewhere there, yeah.
So Good showing there. Yeah, I agree with what Columbia and Stanford were able to do. And, you know, Stanford's without one of their top wrestlers, you know, right. Hunter Gardner, an All-American, was injured and unable. And what do? You've got a guy that bumps up to fill his spot in E.J. Parco, and he becomes an All-American. So Chris Ayers doing some really good things out there at Stanford, which is a great story, like you said, you know. Shane Griffith, remember when he won his national title, didn't wear a Stanford singlet because he wasn't coming back to a program, but he helped kind of save it. Rob Cole went out there for a couple of years, did some good work. Chris Ayers moved from Princeton to Stanford and has elevated it even more. So that's definitely a feel-good story there with what Stanford has done and what they did this year.
Yeah, I forgot about Griffith. You know, as I think about it, did he wore the singlet, but it was it inside out, or was it just not a?
It might have been inside out. I thought it was just a plain black one, but it might have just been inside out, so the Stanford stuff was on the inside.
Right. So anyway, that's good for Stanford and Cornell for sure.
And kind of an adjacent story involving Stanford, Aiden Valencia. A freshman wins that 149-pound title. Might have been like the 10 seed there. He's the brother of Nyla Valencia, the Iowa women's wrestler. And kind of get choked up because it was an emotional post-match interview where Nyla Valencia, All-American this year, her first year after dealing with injury after injury, even – suffered another injury and had to default her last match at the national tournament, but had already got All-American honors. He said he was wrestling for her. Yeah. It's like, I'm going to do this for you. Yeah. She gave him a big hug right in the middle of the interview. She was there, Matt Sy. That was really, really cool. A little bit of an Iowa connection there, but neat story and happy for the Valencias.
Right. Of course, the parents were right there as well. So that was really neat for him to say that, and a really neat brother, sister. And she's now done wrestling, even though she still has another year left maybe because of the, I think, 3 knee injuries it was or something like that. And she had decided that it's time to stop wrestling and maybe be able to walk the rest of your life. Yeah. So here's another bullet point. We've mentioned these already. John Reeder's out of coaching. He's leaving Wisconsin and entering the private sector into business, vice president of a corporation somewhere. And then Trent Hidley moving from Stanford to North Carolina State. So there's a couple of moves there, and I bet you'll see some more throughout. And it'll be interesting to see who fills those spots. Here we go. Here's a big one. Will the NIL create a greater separation now between the haves and the have-nots? And that's what I was talking about with the UNI program. So, for instance, let me get this. I can offer you some numbers. Okay. Let's see. It fell asleep. So money spent, the wrestling program's money spent. I'm going to do this real quick. Number one, Penn State. And this is from Fellers, who did a – you can say – tell me who the – who cited this, KJ?
Adam Fellers, former Iowa wrestler. I think he's heavily involved maybe with Seabolt Wrestling Academy. He's a former Iowa wrestler and from Fort Dodge.
I think he
found the numbers from a Freedom of Information Act.
So it's valid credentials are
valid. Yes.
Okay, so I'm just going to round it. So Penn State is, of course, number one there in spending. And I don't know if this means NIL. I don't know if it means coaches' salaries, if it means travel expenses, if it means all of the things that evolve.
I think probably all of it, all in one.
All of it. Okay, so Penn State spends, here we go, 7.87 million.
Wow.
7 million, almost 8 million. Oklahoma State drops off a little bit. They're 5.06 million. Iowa's third, 4 million. Ohio State, 3.2 million. Nebraska, 3.1 million. Rutgers, who finished 34th and that scored less than 10 points, 2 million, I guess. Virginia Tech, 3.01 million. Michigan, basically 3 million. Iowa State falls in at ninth at 27 million. And then not far behind is Arizona State, just a little behind at 27 million, a little less than that. So my point for bringing that up is lots of big money being spent. That Arizona State was the lowest at 27 million, basically. I think that's probably more than you and I's total athletic budget. I don't know, but it's got to be pretty close, let alone their wrestling budget. So my point is the haves and the have-nots, those that have the money that can go out and buy a team, basically. It's my old Yankees, George Steinbrenner, really for me. So they're out buying your players, and now you lose the guys that are the Parker Kekysons, that'll stay behind and be loyal. And people are going to start chasing money. So I don't know if we'll see that or not, but definitely the teams like you and I that don't have a big budget, it's going to be so much harder to compete. And it's going to be basically about 10 teams that can even get close to winning a trophy. So yeah. Anyway, that's my take on that. And it's disappointing. We've been talking about that for how many years now?
Yeah, but now with revenue sharing, it's going to make it that much harder for smaller schools to compete. And that's where things like culture and, some of those intangibles and where, personalities and stuff like that as coaches have to kind of, supersede.
Right.
The downfall in money that you're battling against, to where you make it a place that people want to go regardless of what they're, kind of financially getting,
right,
or all the bells and whistles.
And that's what UNI has built. And I think Dresser too, also at Iowa State, without having big money, though Iowa State does have some money. But anyway, okay, my last one here, because I know we're going along here, is the youth group. They had, of the national champions, you had two that are not back in Haynes and Trumbull. And then, so here's what you do have left. Lilendahl, 2 years in a red shirt. Forrest, 3 years in a red shirt. Vega, 3 years in a red shirt. Valencia, 3 years. Robidoux, 3 years in a red shirt. Messenbrink, 1 year. McNally, 2 years. And Barr, 2 years. That's crazy.
I know. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. And then throw in the other youth young guys that what's the Oklahoma State 97 pounder?
Kobe Merrill.
Merrill, thank you. Yep. Another one to throw in there, and certainly others as well. I mean,
well, and that whole crop of 133, I mean, right, all four semifinalists were freshmen.
Yeah. That's just
three of them are true freshmen.
Yeah, it's just nutty. Crazy. So it'd be interesting to see if these athletes and the other young guys stay in one place in the next 4 years or whatever. So
yeah,
or if they get money gets thrown at them.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays out. But a lot of them are at some of those bigger programs, but that hasn't stopped the movement. People have gone from top five teams to another top five team. We've seen, remember Aaron Nagao was with Minnesota, and you think Minnesota's that's a top 10 program. That's a good program. It's, tradition. And he goes from Minnesota to Penn State, right?
Yeah.
So that doesn't necessarily matter if they're part of a big, at Virginia Tech, or if you're at, Iowa State or Iowa or wherever,
Little Rock.
You Little Rock or NC State, you know, you go someplace where you think the grass is greener and it doesn't matter as long as you're getting some of that green, right?
Didn't one of the Minnesota kids transfer to Oklahoma State and was one of their top MLS? Or am I thinking Wisconsin? Anyway.
No, Wisconsin. Hamady went from Wisconsin. To Okie State and won a title.
Yeah.
So, All right. Any final thoughts? I know you meant we did go pretty long here in this last one, but now Amir doesn't have to worry about us for a little while. but thank any you. Final thoughts?
Yeah, thank you, Amir, for putting up with us.
Very much so. That's one thing. He's he is somebody that does a lot of string pulling behind the scenes. He's the reason why we're able to come to you every week, and we really appreciate his time and effort to be able to sit through us talking and bringing you wrestling highlights and editing it, getting us all set up, and then distributing out to the masses. So thank you to Amir for his work this wrestling season. Thank you to everybody out there for following along again.
Yeah, been fun.
It's been a blast. Coach, thank you very much for all you do, not just for me personally, being a part of this and our play-by-play team during the high school season, but for the impact that you've had officiating, coaching, everything. You've worn a lot of different hats, and I thank you for being a media member and helping me with the Penny Combination podcast as we continue to go on.
I appreciate you inviting me. So what you're saying is the check's in the mail?
The check is in the mail. We'll add another zero to the end of it for this year.
Oh, yes.
All right. Well, again, thanks, everybody, for being a part of this all season long. We really appreciate being able to do this and bringing you some wrestling discussion. And as always, the tagline from our late friend, Wyatt Schultz, who's a part of the Pinning Combination podcast for many years. Briggsy, send us out for the 25-26 season.
Let's keep wrestling on the move.
Travel should be simple. With Gazette Travel, every detail is handled. You just show up and enjoy with fellow Iowans. View available trips at thegazette.com/travel.